Hi, and welcome to this week's edition of the Diplomats Podcast on Geopolitics in Asia. I'm Ankit Panda from New York.
And I'm Zachary Keck from Washington.
This week we'll be devoting most of our time to discussing the recent disputes that have come up in the South China Sea between China, Vietnam, and the Philippines. And we'll also briefly discuss the state of ASEAN as it stands as a multilateral institution kind of opposing China on disputes and how united exactly ASEAN is after its latest summit. So the two major disputes that we'll go into more detail later include one involving the Philippines and China. The Philippines arrested a few Chinese fishermen off the Half Moon Shoal, and that's turned into a diplomatic incident between those two countries. And the more serious dispute that has the chance to be a game changer in the South China Sea and how countries handle territorial disputes there is between Vietnam and China. China recently placed an oil rig off of the coast of Vietnam in disputed waters that has turned into a major incident between those two countries. And could potentially be highly destabilizing. So, Zach, do you want to fill us in with a little bit of a background on the Philippines and China's dispute?
Yeah, well, so as you were saying, last week near the Half Moon Shoal, the Philippines Maritime Police arrested 11 Chinese fishermen for illegally harvesting endangered sea turtles, which is against Filipino law. And originally, the China's state media said that made it seem as if these 11 fishermen had been taken hostage by pirates. So it said unidentified armed assailants had stormed the boat. But the Philippines Maritime Police announced right after that that they had in fact detained the Chinese fishermen. So basically, the fishermen were found with over 500 endangered sea turtles, most of them dead. And the Philippines has now, over the weekend, charged 9 of the Chinese fishermen for illegally harvesting the endangered sea turtles, and then the other two were actually minors, so they've been sent back to China. But China is calling for all the fishermen to be released because it claims that they were fishing in Chinese waters, since it claims the whole South China Sea.
Right, so it's primarily a jurisdictional issue, which is obviously related to sovereignty. Do you think, like, in the longer term of relations between Philippines and China and their disputes in the South China Sea, that this will be a major event that will sort of the ramifications of how this plays out affect the longer term developments in this area?
No, I think, but it's possible in the short run when Japan detained a Chinese captain who was drunk and collided with a Japanese Coast Guard ship, 2011. China responded by cutting off rare earth exports to Japan, because Japan got all its rare earths from China. So I expect something like that in the short term. But really what this is the Philippines trying to stake its claim to this area by administering it, which in the UN Convention on the Law of Seas, like a lot of how to determine which side owns maritime waters is who's administering them. And this is just an example of that. So this is really the Philippines trying to bolster its claim that it owns these waters.
Right, absolutely. That makes sense. Let's move on and talk a bit about the major dispute that's come up these past few weeks between China and Vietnam. So just a little bit of background here. So in general, relations between China and Vietnam were improving. Just last October, a Chinese premier went to Vietnam, and it looked like, you know, those two countries were, you know, working through some issues, expanding cooperation, but that's all kind of flown out the window this past week. So on the 2nd of May, China's state-owned National Offshore Oil Corporation placed a deep-sea drilling rig in the disputed waters off the coast of Vietnam. China claims these waters in their entirety. It's basing its claim off of its claim to the Paracel Islands, which are known as Xisha in China. And Vietnam essentially objects to the placement of the rig in these waters because it claims that it administers these waters and has exclusive rights to exploit the resources there, both in its own view and through the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea, according to the placement of the continental shelves and everything else there. And the situation actually escalated on May 7th when both China and Vietnam had ships in the region, and Chinese ships began kinetically moving towards the Vietnamese ships. They actually rammed several vessels and used high-powered water cannons. And in the process, they injured several Vietnamese sailors, which Hanoi wasn't shy about publicizing to the world. They released photos and videos. We actually have a few of those up on the diplomat's website. You can go check them out. Now, this dispute, more so than the Philippines dispute, seems poised to be a game changer. It's a series of firsts for China particularly. It's the first time China has attempted to revise the status quo about another country's exclusive economic zone in such a brazen manner. And additionally, the timing of the dispute is particularly notable. It comes just after President Obama left Asia after his grand trip of reassuring allies about where the United States stands in Asia. And it came right before ASEAN summit. In 2012, the ASEAN summit in Cambodia fell apart because the countries were unable to reach a consensus on China. However, this time around, things were slightly different. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But first, Zach, so do you read this as, China essentially trying something new in the South China Sea? I mean, a lot of analysts have been saying that this kind of aggression is really worrying because it could set precedents in the future. So where do you see this going?
Yeah, I just see it as an extension of the claims it's been making. So it's definitely it's definitely stepping up and increasing that assertiveness, but I think it's well within the pattern of China trying to, again, stake its claim to the South China Sea by administering it, by exploiting its resources. That really backs up its legal position, which is very tenuous at this point. What about you?
I mean, I think it's interesting that they decided to pursue this with Vietnam. You know, I think a lot of people were caught off guard just looking at the general state of relations between China and Vietnam. I mean, obviously, they had issues to iron out. The dispute's always been an issue. But I think, you know, if China is going to start pursuing its claims assertively in the South China Sea by actually placing expensive state assets in the area, then it makes sense to start with Vietnam. I found it interesting, some analysts pointed out that the domestic political situation in Vietnam is particularly conducive. I think China read the situation correctly. Vietnam has a very strong pro-China faction within its domestic political scene. And, you know, the two communist parties in those countries have a bit of camaraderie between them, despite the issues. So I think that kind of allowed China to take this gamble with the assurance that Vietnam would respond in a restrained manner. Additionally, the advantage of Vietnam is that it's a country in the South China Sea with a major dispute with China, but it also doesn't have any sort of treaty relationship with the United States that would draw the United States into this conflict immediately. If China had pursued this sort of means with the Philippines or, you know, any other country in the region the United States is closer to, that might have been sort of a different thing. So I think that this is a nice way for China to kind of test the waters out with how far the region will come together multilaterally and how the United States would respond to any sort of aggression.
Yeah, but it did try this with the Philippines within the Scarborough Shoal. So
that's true, yeah.
I think the more significant thing is Vietnam. You're right that Vietnam doesn't have a reliance with the U.S., but it's almost foolhardy on China's part because it's going to push – the Philippines has already tied the U.S. where the Vietnam has sort of been tying itself closer to the United States, and this is only going to accelerate that. Additionally, there's been there's pro-China factions in Vietnam. There's been anti-China protests over this whole incident in Vietnam. And those aren't particularly new, but the Vietnam government's let them happen, which it has, you know, it can shut them down if it wants. So it seems like if that was China's goal, it's sort of miscalculated.
Yeah, it's also interesting in the sense that China can challenge the United States on its self-stated interests in the South China Sea. I mean, the U.S. claims to stand for freedom of navigation, peaceful resolution of conflicts, non-use of coercion and intimidation in disputes. And with this oil rig dispute, China has essentially challenged the United States on all three. I mean, also what's interesting is that the U.S. has pretty much said that, you know, commerce should remain free of these political disputes in the region. And I believe the waters where this oil rig is currently operating were being explored by ExxonMobil, which is, you know, a direct afferent to U.S. commercial interests as well. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, China has put the United States in a position where it has to respond. And, you know, so far the United States' response has been, again, very restrained. The State Department issued a statement calling on both sides to avoid their provocative behavior, focusing more on China. So how do you think the United States has responded here, and do you think it's appropriate? What else should the United States be doing?
I'd like to see a more robust presence throughout, not necessarily for this debate, but I think the U.S. defense budget's prioritizing quality over quantity in terms of ships and vessels, and I think this sort of highlights a danger, because if the U.S. wants to counter China's claims in the South China Sea and the East China Sea, it's going to need a larger presence, where if you only have really expensive platforms and you don't have very many of them, it's going to be hard to always be present in this region, especially with all the other commitments the U.S. has in Europe and the Middle East. So I do like how they're pushing the claim that China needs to clarify the international legal basis for its nine-dash line. So I think that's very smart, because there is really no basis for it.
Right.
But I don't. What are your thoughts on the U.S. response?
I mean, I pretty much agree with most of what you said. I mean, I think the United States, isn't really in charge of this dispute. I think Vietnam is, again, a very interesting target for China to pursue this sort of escalation with, particularly because Hanoi is fairly well-equipped to withstand, Chinese aggression. I mean, obviously, it's not on the level of the PLA Navy, but, Vietnam maintains a respectable fleet of submarines, and, if it decided to do so, it has the potential to escalate this with China. And I think that a lot of people are worried about this, because, once a brinksmanship begins increasing in the area, there's no telling, what China might do with a Vietnamese response. I mean, for now, I think Vietnam is definitely not going to do that, and it seems like both countries are trying to work towards a face-saving solution here that might actually result in Vietnam having to make concessions to China. But we'll see how that works out, and how the United States is going to get involved in the resolution of this.
It's also interesting. You're right, I think, and it's interesting that Vietnam also has really strong ties to Russia too, which is. I mean, so I almost think it'll probably go to Russia to try to push China, to try to pressure China.
Yeah,
that'd
be
interesting.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Vietnam has, it's been ratcheting up ties with Russia, with India, with the United States. It's been concerned. I mean, this is like, despite the improvement of relations between China and Vietnam last year, I think, we shouldn't overstate it. I think there's always been a degree of mistrust between Vietnam and China that's really kind of... was well placed, as we see with this dispute, and I think that you're right that Russia might have to end up doing something here, although they're a little bit occupied at the moment with their own adventures in Ukraine.
That's true, but Putin will be coming to China in 7 days. I actually wrote a piece on Vietnam's balancing strategy back in March, and I made the same point that it seems to be balancing by trying to get as many external powers involved as possible: Russia, India, Japan, mm-hmm. and the United States specifically, so it doesn't become overly dependent on any one power, but it's able to dilute China's influence.
Yeah, I mean, I think Vietnam actually had invited India to explore the same oil fields right now where China's operating as well. I think it was like the United States was given proximal access as well as India. So it's interesting that China is kind of, pushing there because it's really, going to aggravate commercial interests in both India and the United States.
India's been really – and China has really objected to India cooperating with Vietnam on these oil exploration around that area.
Yeah.
So I think that's interesting too. I doubt India will do much, so it's going to be preoccupied with its elections and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't see that happening. I mean, potentially a new government in New Delhi might decide to use this as an opportunity to show that it's serious about its look east policy and supporting its friends in Southeast Asia.
Yeah, once China controls South China Sea, then the Indian Sea is going to be the next thing on its bucket list. So,
yeah. Well, let's talk a bit about ASEAN. I mean, that's again part of China's signaling with this dispute, is that it came right before the ASEAN summit, and what China dreads above all in the South China Sea is ASEAN coming together and putting forth a united front against China, which hasn't happened yet, and it doesn't look like it is going to happen anytime soon. So just to let listeners know, what happened at the ASEAN summit was that the South China Sea issue was a major issue for the heads of state, particularly being pushed by the heads of government of Vietnam and the Philippines, unsurprisingly. And while the foreign ministers and the heads of government didn't come together and issue a statement naming China in their joint statement at the end of the conference, they issued a separate statement calling for restraint and not to escalate this any further, which is a slight change. I mean, in Cambodia in 2012, there was no joint statement simply because there could be no consensus or agreement about the South China Sea issue. So that shows that the ASEAN states are moving forward, but there still remains a lot to be done, particularly as regarding the code of a binding code of conduct for the South China Sea, which is still very far away.
Yeah, I remember I saw background notes. I forget which country had taken them, but we actually got access to some of the notes of the meeting from the 2012 summit, and it was really only Cambodia, at least according to this participant's note, during the foreign minister or the heads of state or foreign minister meeting, and Cambodia was the only one that was objecting to this, so that means that this statement meant that it had given in on the issue a little bit. But, I mean, they still were very restrained, I would say.
Yeah.
Certainly not as up front as Vietnam and Philippines would have been asking for.
Yeah. I mean, considering this time, you know, Myanmar was hosting, that's also partly surprising, considering, you know, Myanmar has a very complicated and close relationship with Beijing. And it was kind of its chance to come out as a normalized nation in ASEAN after its years of political reform. So, yeah, it had the spotlight also, taken away. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah,
I was just going to say, it also, the fact that this came up before the summit, it also detracts from the other issues going on in ASEAN, like the economic community by the end of 2015. I mean, that's what they really wanted to work on. I think before this dispute happened, or these disputes happened, it was all about they were going to talk about the economic community and a few other intra-ASEAN issues. So China precipitating this crisis right before the summit actually kind of detracts from the integration of ASEAN a little bit.
Yeah, I think they succeeded in doing that as well. I mean, it's really quite fascinating. I mean, you know, ever since Beijing implemented its air defense identification zone last November, I mean, I think we've all been waiting to see like what its next move would be, because that was kind of read as the initial, you know, first move. And I think if you look at the response to the ADIZ by the United States and Japan, who basically ignored it, continued their flights without notifying China, and initially China staged protests, but then they've kind of just stopped talking about it because obviously they don't want to push the issue anymore. And it remains to be seen, you know, how countries in the region can begin to impose costs on China for taking this sort of action in the region. Because unless there are costs and negative consequences for China for pursuing aggression in this way, it won't change its behavior, and it will continue ramping it up. So, I mean, it seems like the only real way that China sees itself backing down at this point is if ASEAN can come together, and it doesn't look like that's going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah, what I would like to see is that I wish the four ASEAN countries that have disputes in the South China Sea, Brunei, Malaysia, the Philippines, and Vietnam, I wish they would settle their own disputes in a multilateral way. They have a couple overlapping disputes with themselves.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to see them, because they all have an interest. They're all the ones that are most interested in solving the China issue. So if they could solve the disputes between themselves, then that would ease the issue of presenting a united front towards China. And also it would set a precedent of solving these disputes in a multilateral forum. So China would be hard pressed to ignore that. So
yeah.
I think that's their next move, and I think they should have done that a while ago, though, so we'll see if they actually do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you know, extending an invitation to China to participate in that process might not be a bad idea either. I mean, obviously Beijing wouldn't take them up on it, but...
Yeah, they could, but if they should go forth. What they've been doing now is they have not been going forward unless China participates, and I think that it's time they just solve their own disputes and let China's... Then they can present a united front to China in solving it.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, if this leads to a bilateral resolution between Vietnam and China, I think it'll be very difficult for Vietnam to not concede, you know, the points that it's kind of holding dear right now with this territory. I mean, I think China said that the oil rig will operate in these waters until August at least, which, you know, gives a good amount of time for the two sides to negotiate. But really, I mean, any face-saving solution that precludes any sort of military escalation has Vietnam losing this in the end.
Mm. Yeah, so I don't think they're going to want to push it too far. It's significant that the PLA, they sent PLA ships this time too. As Jim Holmes noted on his blog, that's like one of the first times they've really done that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that says something about the power they see Vietnam holding compared to the Philippines.
Yeah, I mean, I think Vietnam is also trying to come out of this appearing strong. I mean, just yesterday, Vietnamese ships, you know, used water cannons against Chinese ships. I mean, they're kind of fighting fire with China, which is worrisome in an extent. I mean, you know, you really don't want to see tit-for-tat escalation because that could kind of lead to a spiraling out of control. But I think Vietnam is concerned about, you know, what this will mean for its overall dispute with China across these territorial waters.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah. Well, I think that's about it for this week's podcast. We'll be back next week. We'll probably be talking about India's election results, which are expected to be announced this Friday. It looks like for the moment that the opposition BJP is down to take a landslide victory. So we'll talk about a few of the ramifications for Indian foreign policy and economic policy and see where that's all going. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.